This is Vandana Shiva, and you're listening to The Enviro Show. Remember, listen to your mother.
Hi. Are you feeling tired, irritable, stressed out? Well, you might consider nature.
Nature is a non-harmful medication shown to get you out of your head and into the moment.
Nature's recommended for people of all ages.
In rare cases, being in nature may cause you to wake up to the mundane absurdity of consumerism and self-centeredness.
Don't be alarmed if nature gives you a sense that you're connected to everything.
Excessive bragging about nature or what you did in nature may be a rare but serious case if every time you are in nature, you think, gosh, I really should spend more time in nature. Then spend more time in nature.
Nature turned my life around, got me back on track.
Ask your doctor if nature's right for you.
Nature is inexpensive, easily accessible, and available to you now.
It's the Enviro Show. Greetings, Earthlings. It's a Timber Targets Enviro Show. I am one of your co-hosts, Dio. I am not in the studio with...
I'm Glenn Ayers.
Yes, and Glenn, the U.S. Forest Service, Timber Target Decisions, their words, not ours, is putting the climate at risk, undermining Biden's critical climate goals, and violating federal law. Surprise! That, according to the Southern Environmental Law Center, and why would we doubt it given the U.S. Forest Service sorry history, Patrick Hunter, managing attorney at the Southern Environmental Law Center, joins us to talk about SELC's new first-of-its-kind lawsuit. As always, we will also bring you this week's Fool on the Hill and those whose brains were small, as well as Enviroshow Echo Chamber, and more. But first, it's time for... Revenge of the Critters. Do not mistreat camels, okay? If there's one animal that never forgives or forgets, it's the camel. They have good memories and can hold grudges against people who harm them. Harming a camel is likely to lead to a revenge attack that will most likely end in death. One Indian man found this out the hard way in 2016 after he was killed by his own camel. The man had been engrossed in hosting some guests at his home in Mangta village in Rajasthan, India, that he forgot about the camel he tied out in the scorching sun for the whole day with its legs tied. When he tried untying the camel that night, the angry camel caught him by the neck and lifted him up before throwing him back on the ground. Thereafter, it chewed on the neck until the head was separated from the body. It took 25 villagers about 6 hours to calm the angry camel down. Revenge of the Critters, Glenn.
Whoa, I wonder how many stitches he needed to put his head back on.
All right, Fool on the Hill.
And nobody seems to like him, the Fool on the Hill.
This week's Fool on the Hill is Tennessee Republican Representative Mark Green, who, while still a fool for MAGA BS, no longer can handle all the other fools on the Hill. Daily Coast quotes Green, "There's also just the frustration of trying to get something done here. This place is so broken, and making a difference here is just, you know, just feels like a lot of something for nothing." Close quote. Green is a member of the far-right House Freedom Caucus, which played a central role in, fomenting dysfunction on Capitol Hill. Okay, there it is. A fool on the hill who can't stand the fools on the hill. Oh, hey, Glenn. How about their brains were small?
They were big, dumb, and slow.
They couldn't go with the flow.
Their brains were small and they died.
Well, since we're going on about bad actors here, how about going directly to our Their Brains Were Small and They Died segment? Yeah. Did we do private jet owners yet? If so, let's do it again. A Guardian report from November revealed that 200 private jet owners released over 415,000 metric tons of climate heating carbon dioxide between January 2022 and September 2023, which is equivalent of what would be released by nearly, 40,000 British residents from all of their activities. The richest 1% of the world's population currently generate as much carbon emissions as 2/3 of the planet, close quote. So, hey, if you're among the 99%, go to our blog, EnviroShow, without the W, .blogspot.com. There's an action link there to protest proposed Hanscom Airfield expansion right here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. That brings us to the climate crisis.
We're on the planet that has a problem. We've got to solve it, get involved, and do it now, now, now. We need to build a better future. And we need to start right now.
You know, so much negativity. How about we begin our climate crisis segment with some good news instead of, screaming at everyone that it's the climate crisis, stupid. If you live in or visit Medellin, Colombia, you may have noticed new plant-filled curb strips, squares, parks, vertical gardens, and sidewalks have led to a dramatic drop of 2 degrees Celsius across the city. And as the city expands its Green Corridors program, officials expect a further decrease of 4 to 5 degrees over the next few decades, even taking into account climate change. That's what they say. Stick a pin in that one, city dwellers. Now, on to the bad news. FCC approves new climate rules far weaker than originally proposed. The rules designed to inform investors of business risks from climate change were rolled back amid opposition from the GOP, fossil fuel producers, farmers, and others, reports the New York Times. Also from the Times, quote, "Rains are scarce in the Amazon. Instead, megafires are raging." So it seems that rainy season never came. Sound familiar? Go to the blog, click on these links if you want to learn all about it. It's called Climate Chaos, again from the Times. Quote, "Winter was weirdly warm for half the world's population, driven in many places by the burning of fossil fuels, according to an analysis of temperature data from hundreds of locations worldwide." Close quote. And from the Daily Mail in the UK, not exactly the New York Times, this, quote, "The Arctic could be mostly ice-free in just 10 years, and it means intense heat waves will plague the Earth," close quote. And go there, lots of visuals, and there's even links to real science. And in closing, we have an action link, another one, go to the blog, click on the link, EnviroShow.blogspot.com. So go to the blog and click on the link, a letter to Governor Healey opposing the plan to strip local control over energy siting, solar battery infrastructure, and deforestation for, you know, corporate solar.
Yeah, you know, my plan for that Energy and Permitting Commission is I think that they could do a good job of locating the necessary energy storage infrastructure right next to the people that are using the energy. So, you know, like if you have solar panels on your roof, you can put a like a Tesla wall, a battery inside your house to store some of that energy. That makes a lot of sense to me. But putting in these utility scale, you know, tens of acres of huge battery packs, that to me seems like a bad idea, unless they want to locate those facilities right in the same neighborhood where all of those commercial buildings and residents are going to be using that energy. And so that means in the most populated areas in the eastern part of the state, we don't need all of that stuff out in the western part of the state because they're going to be chopping down forests and disturbing the partially intact or intact rural areas in western Mass in order to put in energy storage facilities to feed the grid in eastern Mass. And to me, that's the wrong way to do things. They ought to be concentrating the impact in the eastern part of the state where all the people live, all the energy is consumed. You know, for instance, Franklin County generates more electricity than it consumes, far more than it consumes because of all the hydropower facilities on the Connecticut River. Now, our ecosystems are trashed out here because of places like the Northfield pump storage fish grinder and the dams in Turner's, right on the Connecticut River there by Great Falls. So we've already paid the price for energy generation here. We pay it every day by our environment being greatly diminished by these projects. So we're exporting. Franklin County is a net exporter of energy. We don't need any more energy storage here in this part of Massachusetts, not specifically to feed the eastern energy hordes. What they need is to site these facilities right in their own neighborhoods in the eastern part of the state, and they can figure out how to do that. Or the alternative to that is they can cut way back on the amount of electricity they use, and they may be inspired to do that. This may be an incentive for them to drastically reduce their overconsumption of electricity because they actually have to live with the impacts instead of having everything done somewhere else. You know, let's push the impact off to the suckers out in Western Mass. Well, I think the Energy Siting Board can level the playing field here and make the people that are causing the impact suffer the impact. And I'm sorry if that sounds kind of callous, but everybody needs to be responsible for their actions. The folks in the eastern part of the state need to be responsible for the massive amounts of electricity that they're consuming. And if they want to electrify everything, they're going to have to build the infrastructure right there in their neighborhoods, and they'll do a better job of keeping an eye on things because they won't be keeping an eye on things on how it's done if it's built out in Western Mass. That's for sure. We're going to have to be watchdogging that. So that's my solution to the problem, and I'm glad that they're going to take my advice on that.
Okay, moving on. How about the Enviro Show Echo Chamber, where we remind everyone that March 21 is the International Day of Forests. So hopefully Enviro groups won't just use it as a fundraiser. How about some real action to mark the day? Interesting. Oh, and we replay a must-see video. Go to the blog and click on the link. It's about biomass in the UK, and it also involves North America. It was recommended by our friends at Partnership for Policy Integrity. Sadly, we have to report the sighting of a biomass zombie here in the Commonwealth. But if you go to the blog and click on the link, individuals can contact their own Massachusetts legislators with this message: Massachusetts ratepayers should not fund burning trees for energy. If your state rep or state senator doesn't know about the issue, just tell them biomass is a biomass. Also, this from the Wisconsin Examiner regarding what may be illegal logging in an old growth area on public land, recently brought to our attention by Environment America. This appears to be in defiance of an executive order from the White House. So there's that. And finally, this: with another anniversary of the meltdown of Three Mile Island nuke in Pennsylvania coming up on March 28th, the Clamshell Alliance says, quote, "nukes are still the wrong answer," close quote. Go to the blog, click on that link. I know, Glenn, that one is close to your heart. Three Mile Island.
Talk about an engineering disaster. You know, engineers can design the worst things imaginable, and putting a nuclear reactor, actually two nuclear reactors, in the center of a river on an island made out of sand. And who could have ever thought that was a good idea? But that's engineers for you. They, if you want something done, they'll design it and engineer it for you. But what an idiotic thing to do. One of the worst engineering designs ever created by engineers. So that's my two cents on it. It's still there. It's still probably spewing out radioactivity. You know, I agree with them. No nukes.
Moving on, I have a good quote of the week before our interview. Let's go to the EnviroShow quote of the week. Quote, "We must protect the forest for our children, grandchildren, and children yet to be born. We must protect the forest for those who can't speak for themselves, such as the birds, the animals, fish, and the trees." Close quote. And that's from the Hereditary Chief Edward Moody of the Nuxalt Nation. And I think that's fitting for our interview, no?
That is perfect. That is really perfect. So we're going to talk about something that is near and dear to my heart, and that is trying to stop the destruction of our publicly owned forests, especially, you know, I'm very focused on the state forests here in Massachusetts, but for a long time I was an activist working on stopping national forest timber sales. And this is a great discussion about the underlying motivation or direction that comes from the top within the U.S. Forest Service and trickles down to all of the individual forests out there across the nation. And locally, we talk about the impact that this has on the Green Mountain National Forest and the timber planning that's being done up there, the logging plans that they're developing. And this idea of timber targets is probably something that a lot of people are not familiar with, but this is the way the planning process works in the U.S. Forest Service. They set a quota, a harvest quota, in volume, basically, and that trickles down to the folks on the ground in the Forest Service, and they have to meet that quota. They have to get the wood out, get the board feet out, get the timber out, or else they don't keep their jobs. And so that's why the Forest Service is basically a wholly owned subsidiary of Louisiana Pacific and Georgia Pacific and all the other logging companies, multinational logging companies, because that's who they really work for. Because without those companies coming in and doing the logging, those Forest Service employees wouldn't be able to keep their jobs. So what they're doing now in Vermont is they're planning to meet their timber targets for the next 10 or 15 years by putting in massive plans to cut tens of thousands of acres of recovering northern hardwood forests so that they can meet their targets for the next 10 years. They don't want to plan individual sales. Now they do it by calling them integrated resource management plans. Talk about a euphemism. And, you know, of course, they claim that they're planning for everything. They're considering, oh, all kinds of things like recreation and water quality and wildlife, when all they're really doing, as we'll get into in this discussion, is all they're doing is planning on how to meet their timber targets for the next 10 years. So this is a great discussion. I'm very interested in this lawsuit, and I think we need to bring this same idea here to Massachusetts. It's time for us to file another lawsuit against the Department of Cut and Run, DCR, here in Massachusetts, using this same rationale that they are violating, completely violating the Massachusetts Environmental Policy Act, NEPA. And in this interview, we talk about NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act. But here in Massachusetts, we have the same requirements that they have been ignoring for decades. And it's long past time for us to take DCR out behind the woodshed. So let's get into the interview, and then we'll be back maybe to talk some more about it at the other side. Today on the Enviro Show, we are joined by Patrick Hunter, who is an attorney, environmental attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center. Patrick, welcome to the Enviro Show. Please introduce yourself and then tell our listeners about this lawsuit that you have filed on behalf of a group of plaintiffs having to do with the National Forest timber sales or logging on publicly owned lands. And, you know, give us a picture of what that challenge or that case is about and where you're at in the process and what led to this. And then we'll have a few questions probably about what this means for the climate, what it means for biodiversity, and how folks can follow this and get involved. So take it away, Patrick.
Great. Well, thank you all for having me. Again, I'm Patrick Hunter. I'm a managing attorney at the Southern Environmental Law Center in Asheville, North Carolina. And I have the great privilege of being able to work with people across the Southeast and in other portions of the country on issues related to public lands management with a focus on national forests. And so our work on national forests over the past several decades is really what led us to this point in filing this case, focused on the climate implications of the Forest Service's timber targets. So I'll go in and unpack all of that a little bit more, but I thought it might be worth starting with just some basic information about what happens when we log forests and the legal tools that we're working with here. I imagine most of us listening to this can look around right now and probably see some wood somewhere. And it is true that when we cut down a forest and we turn it into whatever wood product you happen to be looking at right now, there is some carbon stored in that wood product. I think we all know that forests are key to solving the climate crisis because they pull carbon out of the atmosphere, store it in woody biomass, and sort of lock it down there, prevent it from adding to atmospheric carbon levels and worsening the climate crisis. When we cut forests down for wood products, some of that carbon is stored in a wood product for some period of time. But the vast majority of carbon that is stored in a forest, when you convert that forest into 2x4s, for instance, most of that carbon is emitted back into the atmosphere, where it leads to increased atmospheric greenhouse gas levels and intensifies the climate crisis. So just using the Forest Service's data, you know, they completed analysis that says that within 10 years of a harvest, over half of the carbon that was stored in that forest has been emitted to the atmosphere. And within 50 years, you know, something like 10 to 15% of the carbon that was stored in that forest is still stored in something like the wood in your home, and the rest has been emitted to the atmosphere. So I think it's just worth clarifying that when we create wood products through logging, it's true that some carbon is stored in the wood product, but we really need to pay attention to the fact that over the course of that process, a lot of carbon is being put into the atmosphere. Just to throw out some Forest Service data to put a little finer point on this, across the country, the national forests are divided into regions. So region 8 is the southern region. And the Forest Service says that the southern region stores about 912 megatons of carbon. And region 9 is the eastern region, so it includes Massachusetts and the Northeast. And the Forest Service says that region 9 stores about 1,040 megatons of carbon. So we're talking about a lot of carbon stored. In the East Region 9, the Forest Service says that of all of the activities on national forests that are contributing to carbon emissions from that forest, about 81% of those emissions are because of timber sales. You know, wind events that kill forests and result in carbon emissions are responsible for about 10% of those emissions. Fire is responsible for about 9%. But what you can see is the number one event driving carbon emissions on national forests in the East in regions 8 and 9 is timber harvest. So that's just kind of a simplified version of the science there, but hopefully helps people sort of understand what's happening on the ground. The legal tool that we're working with here is the National Environmental Policy Act, or most people refer to it as NEPA. And NEPA is just a procedural law, and it basically says that federal agencies need to make decisions with their eyes open to the environmental consequences of those decisions. So some people refer to it as a look before you leap statute. It just means you need to think about what you're doing, disclose that to the public. And if you do all that, you can move forward with your action, even if your analysis shows that it's particularly harmful. So NEPA isn't a substantive environmental statute that can prevent something from happening. It really just requires analysis and disclosure. So that's kind of the background. I'll try to talk a little bit about the problem that our case is intended to address. Since around the mid-80s through the early 2020s, which is the most recent data we have, the Forest Service has harvested something like 400,000 acres of national forests each year. They usually achieve that harvest through much smaller timber sales. So in my neck of the woods here in the Southern Appalachians, it would not be uncommon to see the Forest Service moving forward with 800 acre or 1,000 acre timber sales or something like that. But you can just do the math there and see that it takes a lot of 1,000 acre timber sales to result in 400,000 acres of timber harvesting across the entire national forest system. Now, it's pretty clear, or I'd say it's crystal clear, that under NEPA, the Forest Service needs to think about the climate consequences of these logging decisions. So when it authorizes a timber sale, it is required under NEPA to say, okay, this is the effect of this timber sale on carbon emissions and carbon storage. What we see time and time again, and what our clients have raised with the forest time and time again, is a failure to really look at the aggregate effect of the numerous projects the Forest Service authorizes each year to hit timber targets. So that 400,000 acres of logging a year, that number is really driven by a requirement to achieve these timber targets. I'll talk a little bit more about how those are set. When the Forest Service analyzes a specific timber project, so a 1,000-acre project, for example, the Forest Service says, look, the climate implications of this project are minuscule, so we're not going to think about them very much, and we're going to kind of set this issue to the side and move forward with our logging plans. But at no point does the agency look at the cumulative effect of authorizing all of these logging projects across the country to log 400,000 acres and what that means for the climate. And so that's really what the case is intended to get at, is what is the overall effect of the numerous projects authorized by the Forest Service each year to hit these specific timber targets. I'll say, you know, we filed this case on behalf of Chattooga Conservancy, which is a great organization working in the Chattooga River watershed in Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina. Another client is Mountain True, another great organization working on national forest issues and other issues in Western North Carolina. And then on behalf of an individual in Missouri who spends a lot of time recreating on the Mark Twain National Forest. And those folks have been raising this issue with the Forest Service for years, and the Forest Service has been refusing to look at the overall effect here of the numerous projects completed to hit these timber targets. And so that's kind of what pushed us to file suit here and try to force the agency to complete this analysis. And I'll just add here that there's agency guidance telling the Forest Service to complete this type of analysis, which in NEPA lingo is often referred to as a programmatic analysis. So agency officials in Washington, D.C. have said, look, it's hard to think about what an individual logging project means for the climate. So if you can't do that successfully, you need to back up a little bit and look at your whole program and complete a programmatic analysis of what it means to authorize all these timber projects to hit timber targets. So I think about this all the time, and I'm not sure if I explained it in a way that was clear. So I'm happy to answer any questions or anything like that.
Oh, no, I think that you gave us a good snapshot of this. And it's an issue that we've talked about a lot on the show, on past shows. And you know, we don't have specifically any national forest here in Massachusetts, but we've been very active trying to force the state to address these same issues at the state level, because they're logging in our state forests and state parks here in Massachusetts. So there's a distinct parallel, or you know, a direct parallel between the way our national forests are treated as a, you know, a resource to be exploited on behalf of the timber industry. And we have the same situation here in Massachusetts, where our state-owned lands, our forest lands that are supposed to be managed by an agency called the Department of Conservation and Recreation. That agency turns out to mostly be focused on parks, but when it comes to the state forest land, they're mostly focused on providing timber to the timber industry. And so, you know, we've been fighting that. We've been talking about it a lot on the show, and the parallels are very much present. Plus, we have the Green Mountain National Forest just north of us in Vermont, where they are planning to do a whole series of multi-thousand acre, 20,000 acre logging jobs on the Green Mountain National Forest. And so I'm sure our allies in Standing Trees, which is a group that we've had on the show in the past, I'm sure they'll be very interested in following this lawsuit as well, because it will directly affect what's happening in the National Forest north of us, the Green Mountains and the White Mountain National Forest. So with all of that said, Patrick, can you tell us a couple of the claims or the charges that are made in your lawsuit? You know, specifically, what are you asking the Forest Service to do differently, you know, besides just conducting the analysis and then disclosing it? But what are the specific charges? What are they violating? The National Environmental Policy Act, the Forest Management Act, that kind of stuff.
Sure. Yeah. So to get into that, why don't we talk a little bit about how these timber targets work, just so folks can have an understanding of that. So basically, the way this works is that each year, the United States Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C. sets a national timber target. It is measured, I think this is important, it's measured only in volume. So the Forest Service, you know, likes to talk about how it's using its timber projects to accomplish ecological good or to mitigate wildfire risk. And there's some truth to that in many circumstances. But what's getting measured here is just a volumetric target. It does not matter if the Forest Service is clear-cutting just for the sake of clear-cutting, or is doing some sort of thinning to mitigate a potential wildfire problem. All of that contributes towards the timber target. So what they're really looking at in DC is just this volume question: how much logging is happening? So each year, USDA sets the national timber target. For the past few years, that's been set at 3.4 billion board feet. In 2021, I believe it was as high as 4 billion board feet. Just for perspective, that's enough lumber to circle the equator about 30 times. So we're talking about a lot of lumber coming off the national forest system. Once that national timber target is set in Washington, D.C., it is then divided among the non-forest service regions. So the idea is that each region is given a portion of the target, and if each region hits its target, then the national target will be fulfilled. Again, at the regional level, the Forest Service divides the regional target amongst individual national forests within that region. So each forest has a target. If each forest hits that target, then the regional target will be fulfilled. And if all the regions hit their targets, then the national target will be achieved. I think it's important to note here that historically, the highest targets have been issued for the South, the East, and the Pacific Northwest. So a couple things to note about that. You know, one, that's where we have our most carbon dense national forests. So if we are focusing our logging in those forests, then we are putting even more carbon into the atmosphere than maybe would happen if we focused timber harvesting in less carbon dense forests. And two, those are some of the forests with the lowest wildfire risks. I don't mean to say that there are no wildfire risks in those forests. There are. But the Forest Service often likes to talk about using logging projects to mitigate wildfire risk. That definitely happens sometimes. But if you are trying to mitigate wildfire risk, you know, you wouldn't be doing most of your logging in the Northeast or the South or the Pacific Northwest. Those areas just relatively have lower wildfire risk. So that's basically how the targets are. Let me add one more thing there. Not only has the Forest Service historically done most of its logging in those three regions, the South, the East, and the Pacific Northwest, but they have said that they intend to increase logging levels in those regions in the future to meet higher timber targets that they anticipate coming down the pike. So getting back to our claims, you know, our claims are that the Forest Service has failed to comply with NEPA when setting the timber target at each of those three levels. So we allege that the national timber target, the regional targets, and then the Forest Service specific targets are all final agency actions under the Administrative Procedure Act, and therefore the Forest Service has to comply with NEPA when setting those targets. Right now, the Forest Service makes no effort to comply with NEPA at all when setting those targets. And so that's kind of the first, I'll try to back up there. That's sort of the first thing that we focus on in our lawsuit is the failure to comply with NEPA when completing those final agency decisions, which are the timber targets. Can I ask any questions about that?
Patrick, yeah, Dio here. You know, the use of the term target says a lot about the National Forest Service mentality. I'm sort of thinking of the war on nature here. But on this show, we were talking a lot about the Southeast and how it was being raped for biomass and such like. And we always noted that their sites, the timber industry sites, are, you know, set on the Northeast. And it just what you said just a moment ago sort of points that out, that they're headed this way. So could you elaborate on that a little?
Yeah. So what we see is the Forest Service doing a lot of logging. You know, I would say this. Over the past 10 years, I bet the volume of logging in the Northeast has probably doubled just on national forest lands. That doesn't, I'm not totally sure about what's happening on private lands. But we are definitely seeing the Forest Service look to the Northeast to accomplish more of its timber target, both at a national and regional level. You know, those forests, you know, Dio, as you mentioned, there's some big logging projects right now being proposed in Vermont. And there's no question that those projects are being proposed in part to fulfill increased timber targets in the Northeast. So that's definitely something we're seeing. You know, I think here it's important to note that timber targets and the drive and the requirement to fulfill them results in a lot of other impacts on the national forest, in addition to just higher carbon emissions and effects on carbon storage. And that's because the Forest Service is really required to do whatever it needs to do to meet these targets. So we've done a lot of work under the Freedom of Information Act to understand the effect that targets are having on just decision-making on the national forest at all. And, you know, I think whatever you care about on the national forest, timber targets are not helping your interests for the most part. So let's say that you're a hunter and you want to go out on the national forest to hunt. We have documents showing that the agency is having to take money that is set aside for game species habitat and doing work to improve that habitat or create more habitat. And they're using that money to hit timber targets, even though the projects they're developing to hit those timber targets, you know, what the agency is saying internally is that those projects have no benefit to wildlife. But they're having to take those funds and use them to push these timber projects to hit timber targets because they have to meet those timber targets. Another really interesting one, this is from a FOIA document on the White Mountain National Forest. The Forest Service said that they had to turn down recreation projects proposed by partners, even when those partners were bringing funding to the Forest Service to accomplish those projects, because the Forest Service had to use its limited funding to authorize projects to hit these timber targets. So, you know, people love our national forest for recreation. I recreate on the national forest all of the time. And the drive to hit timber targets is, you know, complicating our ability to do that. And I think really distracting the Forest Service from the reasons that people really love and value our national forests. I'll just give one more here. This is from another national forest. They said that the requirement to hit timber targets was impacting their ability to provide basic customer service, to provide for health and safety, to conduct basic maintenance, to keep trails opened and maintained, and to respond to needs resulting from catastrophic events in a timely manner, including wildfire. So we really see these timber targets having an effect on all levels of agency decision making. You know, our case is focused on the climate effects. And, you know, one of the reasons for that is there is truly an aggregate or an overall effect on the climate from all of these timber projects across the country. And just another way to maybe think about that, and I've been asked this a couple of times by folks, but one reason that our case isn't focused on, you know, water quality, for instance, is that it's much harder to say that a timber project that has an adverse impact on water quality in Vermont, when added together with a timber project that has an adverse effect on water quality in Oregon, that there's some cumulative effect to water quality there that should be assessed at a national scope. I think we really just don't see that. You know, what's happening in Vermont to water quality is not cumulative with what's happening in Oregon. But that's not true of the climate issues. You know, when we are cutting down forests in Vermont or Virginia or wherever and sending carbon up into the atmosphere, that is having an overall effect with the same practice resulting in carbon emissions in California or Oregon or Texas or wherever. So I think that's kind of one piece of the puzzle here that's important.
Yep, Patrick, I know from looking into this and reading a lot up on how the National Forest Timber Program works is that there have been what I believe to be credible analyses done that show that the Forest Service actually spends about $2 billion a year more than it brings in revenue on these timber sales. So all of this destruction and all of this carbon emission is actually being subsidized or paid for by the taxpayers. But anyway, if you would explain to our listeners how they can find out more about this lawsuit, what website to go to, how to contact your organization, how to support the work that you're doing, and because none of this is free, and you know how to keep track of what's going on, get on a listserv, whatever.
Great. Yeah. Thanks, Glenn. So I'll just say, just in response to that, I think you're right about a lot of that. You know, this case is built out of our experience in the Southern Appalachians, but you know, I think it has national implications, and you know, our claims are larger than just what's happening here in North Carolina, South Carolina, Missouri, other parts of the South. If folks are interested in learning more about our case or our organization, you can find us online at www.southernenvironment.org. And again, the name of the organization is the Southern Environmental Law Center. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook and follow us there. And if you do go to our website, there's a place there where you can sign up for our newsletter to get more information about our public lands work, about this case, and about other environmental issues that are happening in the South, but you know have connections to the entire country and certainly to the Northeast. So, you know, work about species that migrate up and down the Atlantic corridor and just a whole host of issues. We'd love for people to check that out if they're interested. In terms of next steps, we have only recently filed our case. It's pending in the Federal District Court for the District of Columbia. The next thing that would generally happen in this case is that a lawyer would make an appearance for the Forest Service, and they are now on the clock to file an answer to our complaint. So when you file these cases, the Forest Service generally has 60 days to respond to the complaint. And that's kind of what we expect here. We don't expect anything different in this case. We will continue to update people about the status of the case on our website. And you know, if folks want to reach out to me with questions, I'm certainly happy to respond as best I can. In terms of things that people can do, a lot of my experience is focused on national forests. So Glenn and Dio, I'll leave it to y'all to explain how this fits together with what is happening on state forest in Massachusetts, though I'm sure that there are many parallels. But one thing that I've really taken away from this experience, I mentioned a couple of times, but timber targets are really driving Forest Service decisions in a way that I just didn't appreciate until I really started digging into the documents we obtained under the Freedom of Information Act here. So I think of myself as someone who knows what's happening on the national forest, and I was just kind of blown away at what an effect these timber targets have on the agency. So I would encourage folks to reach out to the Forest Service, ask for more information about how timber targets are driving decisions on the forest they care about. You know, under NEPA, the Forest Service is required to provide comment periods when it's going to move forward with timber projects. I always think it's great for people to get engaged when there's an open comment period. Ask the Forest Service for more information about these issues. Ask the Forest Service to tell the public how these projects are furthering timber targets. And that is, I don't know that I've ever seen a NEPA document for an individual timber project that says we are doing this timber project to hit partially to hit our timber target. That is definitely what is happening. That needs to be more front and center. It needs to be more of an issue of public discussion. We hope that our lawsuit will help daylight some of these issues, but it's not something that we can do just on our own. And I hope people will, write the Forest Service, get involved in these issues, get connected with other organizations. Glenn, I know you mentioned Standing Trees in Vermont, get connected with them, and help really bring some of these issues to light so that the public really has a better understanding of what's happening on our national forests.
Excellent. Well, that's the perfect note to end on. Patrick, really, really want to thank you for being on the show and for explaining this to us and our listeners. And we will definitely link to all of this stuff on our blog, and we'll follow this closely. We'll sign up for the newsletters and that kind of stuff to follow this, because like you said, it directly affects what's happening here in the Northeast with our national forests nearby, and the parallels to the same insanity that's happening at the state level, is very striking. So once again, Patrick Hunter, thank you so much for being on the show, and keep up the great work. This is it's an inspiration for me. I've been dreaming about filing another lawsuit against the state logging program. And like I said, I read your complaint, and I was salivating, thinking I can write that into a complaint here in Massachusetts. So, hopefully I won't be graded too heavily on plagiarism, but you've inspired me, and I hope you'll inspire other listeners to get involved.
Thanks, Patrick.
That sounds great. I appreciate it, y'all.
All right, we are back.
Yeah, what can you say? It's really important for activists to challenge this climate-destroying activity, the most climate-destructive activity that is happening on our public lands is logging, and it needs to be challenged. We're never going to meet our climate goals, arriving at so-called net zero, unless we protect forests, allow them to continue to grow, and continue to increase the amount of carbon they're removing every year from the atmosphere, instead of business as usual, which is to impact the forest through destructive logging operations. So let's all work on that together. We need to make a change if we're going to survive.
There it is, Virtual listeners, and we'll be following up on this Green Mountain Forest cutting plan and resistance against it. Of course, we're always on the case here in Massachusetts with our public lands. But right now, let's move on to the bus stop billboard.
All right, Tuesday, March 26th from 4 to 5 p.m., artificial turf meeting, and that's going to be online. And if you want to find out more about that, there's an email address that you can write to in the blog, enviroshow.blogspot.com.
And then also on the 26th, 5 to 6 p.m., Protecting Public Science, How to Strengthen Scientific Integrity in Government. People across the U.S. rely on federal science to ensure our water is drinkable, our air is clean, and our medicines are safe and effective. We must make sure that Congress passes the Scientific Integrity Act so that federal agencies are safe from the political attacks that undermine our public health and environmental protections. Go to the blog and click on that link.
All right, Wednesday, March 27th, 6:30 to 8 p.m., this looks like it's an in-person meeting at the Millers River Environmental Center, 100 Main Street in Athol. They're going to be talking about large battery storage systems and solar fields. What are the issues? So there'll be speakers and a Q&A session. There's no contact on the blog right now for that, but check it out.
That's right. It's in person. And Sunday, April 7th, 10:30 a.m. to noon, Professor William Mumma, one of the Earth's major forest scientists, a winner of the Nobel Peace Prize on storage of carbon by forest trees, speaking at the Greenfield All Souls Unitarian Meeting House, 99 Main Street. And there's free parking. And once again, that's an in-person event.
All right, April 11th, time to be announced. Join the Washington Post live for a compelling and high-powered summit with policymakers, innovators, civic leaders, examining the tipping points at this crucial moment. And there's a link for you to watch that live during this perilous time for humanity, having to do with trying to increase our amount of clean energy and improving the public's understanding of the effects that global warming are having on our future. So check it out. You need to register for that. Go to the blog, click on the link.
And then Saturday, April 20th, all day, rain date the 21st, solar rollers, Earth Day river ride, bicycle ride from Greenfield, Mass. To Northfield, Mass., with stops along the way and a rally at the Riverview picnic area in Northfield to shut down Northfield Mountain Pump Storage Station, what we call a fish blender, and contact ctriverdefenders@gmail.com.
Yeah, the Shadowmatic fish grinder. And that's probably enough for this show. There are other things always listed on the EnviroShow blog. The bus stop billboard is updated frequently, so check it out at enviroshow.blogspot.com.
Exactly. And I do believe that that is it, except there's one more thing, EnviroShow listeners. Be sure to listen to your mother. This is Dio saying adios.
Yeah, and I'm Glenn Ayers saying, hey, screw the targets. Stop chopping down our public forests. And yeah, listen to your mother.
I am Mother Earth, and I approve of this message.